Social media strategist Scott Kleinberg. Good morning, Scott. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Bob. I'm okay. How are you?
I'm working my way up to about 50% right now and still moving up on the charts.
Better than last week. That's good.
Yeah, let's talk about this new study. And I didn't need a study to tell me that there's so much misinformation about COVID-19 out there. But most of it is on Facebook compared to Twitter and YouTube. Is that what the study shows?
Yep, that's exactly what the study shows. This is global research conducted by Press Gazette, which is a journalism watchdog site in the UK. And yes, they found that 4,094 of 7,295 misleading claims about the virus originated on Facebook. So that's a huge amount. Now, in comparison, there were 1,066 false claims traced to Twitter, 999 on WhatsApp, which is also owned by Facebook, 265 on YouTube, and 90 on Instagram, again, also owned by Facebook. So a lot of it, yes, originating on Facebook-owned properties.
Yeah, interesting. I wonder if that's because just more people share information on Facebook. How did they arrive at all of these numbers?
Well, yeah, I mean, that part is really interesting. So the stats, they're gleaned from what's called the Coronavirus Facts Database, which I learned a lot about, and that is, it's a project, and it's being led by the International Fact-Checking Network at the Poynter Institute. And since January, as the virus has been spreading across the globe, this project has grown to include over 100 members from 70 countries, so it's very, very widespread. It's actually been described as the largest collaborative project ever launched in the fact-checking world, so, I mean, you know, pretty huge. It's updated every day. There's participants uploading all of these things that they find that are presumably false and discovered online, anywhere from just a general user to politicians, and every record is dated and published alongside a description and a comment where it was initially found, be it, you know, Facebook, Twitter, just like we talked about, WhatsApp, YouTube, Instagram. And Facebook has told Press Gazette that it's continuously checking and removing content. And, you know, we know that they're often saying that. But as we know, voices are growing, you know, louder for more. This whole ad boycott that's going on right now, it stems from this very thing. They're saying that Facebook is not doing enough to spread, to slow the spread of misinformation and violent posts.
What kind of information, misinformation, are we talking about? What are we seeing in this list of falsehoods?
We are seeing all kinds of stuff, Bob, so this is really interesting. Donald Trump was named as a source for at least 30 of the false or misleading articles. So you have the claim that the drug hydroxychloroquine is an effective remedy for the coronavirus. Bill Gates of Microsoft, he's among the most popular subjects of misinformation. His name was mentioned 115 times. And then there are 393 false claims containing the word cure, cured, or cures. So when you see people say things like, well, what about hot steam and tea and chewing raw onions and sunlight and vitamin D, you know, and then gargling with bleach. So all of these things that we're so used to seeing, you know, it's just spreading like wildfire.
Yeah, I mean, you've talked about this before, and it's as dangerous as the virus itself. And then people just don't think, and they share, and it grows and grows, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, it's easy. Think about this. It's easy to be in awe of 393 false claims mentioning the word cure. But the real danger is when so many of those surround gargling with bleach when it came straight from Donald Trump himself. And, you know, like you were saying, I've said all along that Facebook, other social media platforms have to create a way to keep that from ever reaching their users. It's not enough for something to be posted and then eventually flagged and eventually taken down, because by the time that happens, the damage is so done. The falsehood spread like wildfire. We have a viral story. So removing it helps eventually, but just barely.
So what can we do? I still go to that site Snopes to check out a lot of this. Do you like Snopes?
I like Snopes. I'm glad that you go to Snopes, and it's exactly the kind of thing that I recommend. I look to you, I look to everyone else, not to post and share content that you know is false, or content where you aren't sure. See, that's the thing. People say, well, I didn't know it was false. Well, if you're not sure, before you post it, you know, go to Snopes or go to Google. And people say, well, that's not my job. And they're right. Technically, it's Facebook's job. But in the absence of any meaningful change, I believe it falls to us. I think it falls to the users of social media, no matter what platform you like. And I think we have a responsibility for what we post and what we share, because if we don't start the spread, you know, then we bring those numbers down.
You know, this is another topic for another day, but we really have to be better consumers of news and information. There is so much more available to us now, a lot of good sites and a lot that are more than ever that are bad. We just have to be smarter, don't we?
We do. We have to be smarter. And you know what? You're right about there being so much stuff. It's like information overload. People have access to so many headlines. So they go and they share a headline and then they share another and they share another. But they don't realize that every time they do that without reading the content first, they don't know what they're sharing until later. And then they're like, I didn't mean to share that. But by then it's too late.
Yeah. Social media strategist Scott Kleinberg on the line with us with our weekly social media update. And let's talk about Twitter and this paid version. Is it closer to happening, Scott?
Maybe. It's still very unclear what paying for Twitter would actually get you. It came up again recently when someone spotted a job listing on a team that's actually working on what people believe to be the paid Twitter project, but it was quickly removed, and it likely was never meant to see the light of day, or that's what people think. I'm not sure if they posted it just for this reaction. It's really hard to tell.
Do we need this? Do we want a paid Twitter?
That's a good question. It really depends. There are different scenarios, and one that people are pretty focused on right now, Bob, is a person who would pay for the ability to interact in a special way with someone who's tweeting, who's either a celebrity or has a large following. So in a regular world where there's all this trolling and all this bad stuff going on, I would think of it more like the first class section on an airplane.
Yeah, and do you like that idea?
I think it's a great idea if it was 2012, and now I feel like it almost has to be a separate app to be useful. But let's just imagine for a second. Let's imagine that there was Twitter and Twitter Pro. Twitter was free. Twitter Pro cost $9.99 a month or $99 a year. And in Twitter Pro, you'd get real conversation exclusive to Twitter. You'd be able to have a meaningful exchange with people. People would be able to pay to get special access to report the troublemakers who don't belong. And all of that, I don't see it being super popular.
I think a lot of people will think that they shouldn't have to pay for Twitter to do what they should have done in the free version years ago.
Bingo. Exactly right. Exactly what people tell me. And I did a super quick non-scientific Twitter poll on Twitter asking people, what would make you pay for Twitter? I got about 25 responses, and they were all the same. Nothing. And it's really what you just said. We've been supporting Twitter for so many years. We've been watching this hate increase and all this misinformation we've been talking about. So now there might be a future where you get this better version for a cost. And that sounds great for investors and people like that, but I would be so surprised if customers felt the same. But that said, Bob, you know, I've been wrong once or twice before, and, you know, we don't know what this final product will look like, but I can tell you this, as of now, I have no plans to pay for Twitter.
Well, also, we're so used to Twitter free, and now to have to pay, even if it's a slightly different version, it's kind of like with the newspapers and magazines and what they had to go through, and now with the paywalls, it's taken a while for them to get people to pay for what they were getting for free.
That is absolutely true. And I also think when it comes to technology, I think there's this sense of pride, this sense of ownership, because, you know, people have made these social and technological platforms what they are, because without us using them, they wouldn't exist. So people are like, okay, where's my reward? And then they come back and they say, well, your reward is you get a better version of what you've been using for all these years helping us, and you're going to pay $10 a month for the privilege. And I think when it comes to that, I think that's where people get get even more upset than, you know, just about, you know, paywalls are absolutely true. You know, people don't necessarily want to use them or believe they should have to pay for them. And I think the same thing is true in technology.
By the way, Dean Richards and I have been talking about this for a couple of weeks now. I'm still having great difficulty getting Apple Plus and Disney Plus. Now, is that in your purview of expertise?
I don't know if I would call it expertise, because I'm having my own problems getting Apple TV Plus to work, because I have an Apple TV thing that's too old to use, so I can't actually watch it. So yeah,
me too.
I'll research it for you, though, Bob. Anything you need.
Yeah, please. Scott Kleinberg, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Bob. Take care.
Have a good week.